This is The Week in Review. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Friday, February the 24th. We have two guests with us from different political perspectives to talk with you about all the top political news stories in the news this week, and we welcome your input too at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We are going to talk about a lot of things this morning, from the GOP debates, gas prices, lots of state news, from mining to redistricting to new election polls. And we want to talk about whatever you want to talk about. Let me welcome our guests. Ruth Conniff is with us, political editor for the Progressive Magazine. Good morning.
Good morning.
And Steve Prestigard is with us, author of the Presta blog. And good morning to you, Steve.
Good morning. I'm doing my Barry White impression this morning because I've had a sinus infection for 3 weeks, which, of course, got worse yesterday. So, you know, I probably don't sound like myself, but
that's okay. I know that is going around. Thank you for joining us with your Barry White voice. And if I hear you coughing, I'll just hang up on you. No, I'll turn down your microphone.
It's just a good thing that I'm up here, so I don't think I'm contagious over cell phone lines.
Well, we're glad both of you are with us. And I hardly know where to start. There's so much stuff going on. But I guess I'm going to start with, I'm just going to start with this Marquette Law School poll that came out this week, because it gives us a springboard to talk about a lot of these other issues. The poll came out, and it showed that Governor Walker's favorability ratings have gone down from last month to this month. Let me just start there. Steve Prestigard, should he be concerned about that?
Not particularly, because the more interesting poll, I guess, would be the poll that they did not... excuse me, you're going to hear a lot of that. the poll that they didn't do that they did back in January, which is, how does Scott Walker line up in a recall election against, Kathleen Falk and... Kathleen Vinehout and Douglas Follett and Tom Barrett and whoever, is going to end up throwing their names in the ring. Approval and disapproval ratings are kind of one-time snapshots. I don't think that they're particularly significant unless you have a several-month trend that indicates that. It's, Walker's been divisive. That happens when you make difficult political decisions. You had the segment during the NPR news report about the governor of Maryland, signing or about to sign a same-sex marriage bill into law. I'm guessing that opponents called him divisive. I'm guessing he didn't care about that. And, unless there's this trend and there's a bigger margin, frankly, than 2 points, I don't think it's incredibly significant.
Yeah. A month ago, he was viewed favorably by 50% of the poll respondents, unfavorably by 45%, but that now it's, I hope I have this right, 47% approving, 47% disapproving. I think I have that right. But anyway, Ruth Conniff, what's your reaction to that headline of that poll?
I think to say that Walker is divisive is the understatement of the year. I mean, this, our state is national news because of the just complete and total outrage against the things that Walker has done. He's really taken us in a radical new direction. But I think what the poll reflects is not as much the union rights issue or even the huge budget cuts to schools, which, are really feeling the effect now, and that's part of it. I think it's the John Doe probe, and I think it's, when 15 of your closest aides and advisors are facing felony indictments and your own spokesman has immunity, and there's more and more news about just the corruption in the governor's background, people's opinion sinks. Even Republicans and independents who were, supportive of some of the policies Walker put forward are not liking the criminal background. And I think that where the Republicans have wanted to delay the recall in the past, you see some noises about accelerating it and maybe not dragging their feet as much now, because the more this story is in the news, the more that comes out, the worse for Walker.
Yeah. Well, the John Doe was also asked about in this poll, asking people, do you think this is serious, or do you think this is just politics as usual? The majority, 52% or so, of Steve Prescott thought that this John Doe investigation was serious stuff.
Well, obviously, they're reading the news media reports, but, you know, if this were, if Scott Walker were a Democrat, I can hear Democrats saying, the investigation must pan out, and you know, that's, I think, the answer. And I don't know that 52-40% is enough of a split to affect people's decision about who they would vote for in the recall election when it comes up. If there's something that really, truly connects Walker to what his aides were doing instead of the, you know, what it looks like right now is sort of the poll, you know, to use a term from the 80s, plausible deniability thing. If there's a more direct connection, you know, I guess we'll know if Republicans think it's a big deal if somebody decides to run against Walker in a GOP recall. Is that very likely? Probably not. But, you know, if they start thinking he's toxic, I mean, truly toxic, as though they'll lose because of the John Doe probe, that might be much more interesting coming up in a few months.
Well, there is a rumor going around that, there's, I guess, an online movement going around encouraging Republicans or people who support Scott Walker to write his name in during a Democratic primary. Steve, is that going to happen?
Are people going to write him in? Yeah. Absolutely. Is that going to legally happen? My understanding of it is that... it's kind of too bad, but apparently someone cannot be a candidate for more than one party, which I guess messes me up because I always thought I would run for office as a Republican and a Libertarian, but apparently I can't do that, and apparently Walker, you know, you can vote for him, you can vote for whoever you want. That doesn't mean that you can end up on the ballot legally.
Let me ask Ruth first to kind of give us an analysis, an assessment of what's happening on the Democratic side in a recall election. This week, former Dane County Executive Kathleen Falk picked up another labor endorsement from the Service Employees International Union. She already has WEAC's backing. Tom Barrett said this week in an interview that he seriously is considering getting into the race. And just yesterday, Doug LaFollette, Secretary of State Doug LaFollette, and he signed papers intending to run for governor. He wants to be put in one of these polls to see if he, you know, see what kind of support he might have. What do you make of all this, Ruth?
Well, I think Kathleen Falk got out there early and immediately, you know, declared. She was out there alone for quite a while, and she picked up a number of labor endorsements. And I think Barrett, who is not a favorite among unions for his takeover of the Milwaukee schools, is waiting to avoid getting beaten up by WEAC, who support Falk, and, you know, thinking about getting in later. I think, you know, he's got more statewide name recognition. On the other hand, he also lost last time. And Doug LaFollette has put out messages saying, you know, I wish that they would include me in some of these polls so I could tell if anyone supports me or not. So I'm not, you know, in my opinion, we're not really talking about the candidate yet here.
Oh, we're not. What about Kathleen Vinehout?
Kathleen Vinehout is also in there. I mean, the two Kathleens are the only declared and, you know, definite candidates so far. And I think a lot of Democrats are hoping to see somebody who has, you know, bigger name recognition. And Barrett, I think, sees himself as that person and is holding back for now. But there's going to be a primary, and everybody's going to duke it out. And we'll see, you know, we'll see which one of these folks. You know, Kathleen Falk has a lot of discipline. She's working really hard. But, you know, she's the Dane County Executive, so she's got a big hill to climb to get out there statewide and get the support of the entire state. And Barrett is, you know, of that group, the most recognized, but, you know, he's got the union opposition, so I think that is why he's kind of hanging in there and waiting. And Vinehout is a really appealing candidate in a lot of ways as a dairy farmer and, you know, a really, she's been one of the 14, has been very involved in passionately opposing the education cuts and health care cuts that Walker has pushed through, really speaks from a rural point of view, but again, also needs to really step up if she's going to get the kind of statewide name recognition and support that she would need to run for governor and win.
Yeah. So who else might be? Do you think Dave Obey's going to wander into this, Ruth?
Obey hasn't ruled it out, and Herb Cole hasn't ruled it out. And, you know, of course, for progressives, everybody is hoping that Russ Feingold would run, but he has said repeatedly that he won't. But, you know, I think the more that corruption and campaign finance violations become the issue, the more pressure there is on Russ to run, and I think there is some chance that he would get in.
Yeah, he did say once again, though, on Jon Stewart's show this week that he is not going to run for governor.
Yeah, I think I doubt that Feingold can go anywhere in the state or the nation without having absolutely everybody ask him this question. And I think, you know, it's a lot of pressure on him, and he's on a book tour and he's enjoying private life. But, you know, it's a lot of pressure, and I think. Really, if you look at what's happened with the recall and what the issues are in these last few months, you know, raising money on the taxpayers' time, you know, setting up this secret network when Walker was county exec, and all these indictments, you know, and just the fact that the scale of the out-of-state money that Walker is raising, the fact that David Koch has proudly announced he's going to come in here and dump a lot of money into Wisconsin in order to win for Walker, these are Russ Feingold's issues. And I think, you know, if there's going to be a candidate that's going to run against that and say, I'm truly a grassroots candidate, and, you know, I'm not going to run with a whole bunch of out-of-state money to basically take over Wisconsin from out-of-state, you know, that's a message that, you know, he has to look at that and think, this could really be the time.
Yeah, and I want to talk a little bit more about that campaign money and a flap over an ad that's running right now in just a minute. But, Steve, you want to give us your thoughts on the Democratic field in a recall election?
Well, let's see. We have the Madison Democrats, who will be immensely unpopular with non-Democrats. We have Kathleen Vinehau, who may actually have sort of an advantage in that some, you know, a lot of people don't know who she is. Although I can't say from what I've seen from her voting record that there's anything particularly moderate about her. The Democrats, and then there's Barrett and Doug LaFollette, who interestingly has one advantage on everybody else that's been listed so far in the among potential candidates, and that is he's actually won statewide elections. You know, he's won for an office that has, I believe, 6 employees. So, you know, that I don't know how significant that is, but unlike Kathleen Falk, who's lost statewide elections twice, unlike Tom Barrett, who's lost statewide elections twice, unlike Russ Feingold, who just got beat in an election he should have never lost, and unlike Kathleen Vinehau, who's never run in a statewide race, you know, at least LaFollette has apparently figured out how to win an election in this, a statewide election in this state as a Democrat. Now, having said that, I don't think that there's a single candidate that the Democrats have mentioned yet who would be particularly appealing to the undecided voter, assuming that there are any really undecided voters out there. I think a lot of people who are not particularly, you know, who don't identify themselves as Republicans or don't identify themselves as Democrats are pretty disgusted with the tone of what's going on right now. They turn on the TV and they see some, you know, Democratic legislator screaming at the top of his lungs in Madison. They turn on the TV and they see, you know, Republicans saying something they have no idea what they're talking about. And I think the undecided voter, which we supposedly still have in this state, the undecided, unattached voter, is not going to vote for anybody who's currently a Democratic candidate or a potential Democratic candidate. If the Democrats were smart, they would be looking for something who would be Wisconsin's answer to Bill Clinton's third way. You know, the idea that they're going to, you know, that this will be a governor who will not merely raise taxes in order to cover up for problems in government finance, but he's also, or he or she is also not going to be somebody who's who is reflexively against anything that the unions want or reflexively against anything business wants. That phrase, a uniter, not a divider? That if the Democrats really want to win a recall, I think that's what they have to do. I don't think they've figured that out yet.
Let me shift to another item in election or recall election news. State Democrats are filing a complaint against Americans for Prosperity, groups funded by David Koch. We heard in the Wisconsin newscast just before we started that the Democrats say Koch and those groups are violating their nonprofit status by helping Governor Walker in the recall effort. Republicans say this is just stifling free speech. Ruth Conniff, your thoughts on that?
I think it is really the issue right now. How much money? I mean, Walker has spent more money than anyone in the history of Wisconsin to seek statewide office, and so much of that comes from out of state. And I think, you know, people don't like it. It's really kind of the pinnacle of the Citizens United era here. I mean, when you look at, you know, $4.1 million raised over a five-week period, 61% out of state, you know, you have these huge donors, the same people who are giving to the super PACs for the National Republican Field, who are, you know, buying government in our state. And I think it sits really poorly with people. And that comment by David Koch in Florida that, you know, of course he's going to dump a ton of money into Wisconsin, he's proud of what he's done. I mean, I just think it's corrupt and people don't like it. The government doesn't belong to the citizens. The government belongs to out-of-state billionaires who can, you know, pour money in so they can pursue their own financial interests in our state. Mm.
Quick response, Steve, because we have a break coming up.
Well, let's see. The Koch brothers employ 4,000 people in this state, about 2,400 of them for Georgia Pacific, which I think no listener to this show can really say that. This is, you know, to say that does Koch support Walker? Well, apparently he does. The union support, you know, they supported Feingold before, and they supported Barrett and so on. And the thing is, campaign finance, contrary to what Ruth said, campaign finance is, I think, the biggest so what issue among people who are much more concerned about, will they have a job next month, you know, what's happening with $5 a gallon gasoline and all of that. And this is the biggest, you know, in covering politics and in reporting on politics for close to 20 years, I have yet to see anyone who's not a political geek have any interest at all in any kind of campaign finance issue.
Well, let me hold it there. We are talking with Steve Prestigard and Ruth Conniff during this edition of The Week in Review. We'll get to some of your calls in a moment. We'll talk about other top issues in the news. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Maybe we'll talk about those gas prices and the debate going on over that coming up very soon. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. You can join your views on the news after 4 o'clock this afternoon. Call in and talk with Ben Marins and his guest after 4 about what you consider to be the week's top news story. Your views on the news every Friday between 4 and 5. This is our Week in Review. We have two guests with us from different perspectives, and we're talking about a number of the top political news stories of the week. Ruth Conniff and Steve Prestigard are our guests today. There was a challenge to Republican redistricting, the new redistricting maps, in court this week. Some of the latest news, UW-Madison political scientist Ken Mayer testified yesterday that the 8th and 9th Assembly districts were radically reconfigured under the new plan in a way that he said severely diminished the Latino community's opportunity to elect a candidate of its choice. Ruth Conniff, what do you make of redistricting in court? Oops, I'm sorry. No, now you can talk.
Okay. Mm-hmm. It's something to watch, the total contempt of the Republicans for the judge and for the process and some of the really strong brushback that they've gotten just the secrecy of the process, the fact that they have wanted to keep this whole thing under wraps, that they did it in a secret conference room at Michael Best and Friedrich up on the square in Madison, that there were secrecy oaths sworn to keep this stuff from the public. And, you know, the judge has been really outspoken about how outrageous it is to that the Republicans think that they can just seize this process and make their own maps, and without even allowing people to see what they're up to, and trying to get immunity, from testimony for people who are lobbyists who are involved. I mean, it's really slimy, and I think, you know, once again, this is an assault on Wisconsin's open government tradition, and just the bipartisan way that this had been done in the past is out the window. There's a proposal now by Democrats and Republicans to try to have a nonpartisan redistricting process in the future. But for now, I think that it's very likely that the judge is going to issue a contempt order. Mm-hmm.
Steve?
I doubt that. I don't know. I think, again, that their whole redistricting thing, similar to campaign finance reform, you know, unless it directly affects you, you know, I don't think many people care. I do, one personal observation about it is that it was kind of interesting to see where the districts around Ripon changed. But, you know, there have always been two goals about redistricting. Number one is to protect whatever party won the election in the year of the census. Clearly that's happening. The other one is, of course, the incumbent protection plan, which is this kind of sordid little deal that has occurred every 10 years in this state, to where they make sure that each party's incumbents in office kind of get help. I guess I would be a little bit more convinced about the Democrats' interest in changing the redistricting process that we have. And by the way, I would support that. But I'd be a little bit more convinced of their interest in it had it not been for the, I think, obvious fact that had the election results been different in 2010, Democrats would be doing the exact same thing that they accuse Republicans of doing right now.
Let's take Georgia.
Redistricting is about the party, and it's also about controlling or making sure that incumbents continue to be incumbents. So I guess I'd be a little more convinced about their interest in modifying redistricting had they been bringing this up 2 years ago or 2 or 3 years ago when Democrats ran everything in Madison.
All right, we have George in Milwaukee on the line. Hi, George.
Yeah, hi. Regarding the redistricting, saw an interesting item in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel yesterday in their story on the redistricting. And they said that Republicans have insisted under oath that partisan interests played no role in how they drew up the maps. I thought that was the biggest guffaw of the week for me.
It's such a joke. I mean, the other thing is, you know, I think you can brush aside things like, you know, billions of dollars from billionaires influencing policy in the state and our governor being answerable to, you know, out-of-state billionaires more than the citizens, say, oh, people don't care about that. And you can say, you know, redrawing the maps and shutting the public out of the process, yeah, people don't care about that. People may not know a lot about these things, but I tell you what, in Wisconsin, we have gotten an education in a big hurry about the kind of power that we're up against as citizens. And this, yes, political parties take a partisan approach to viewing the maps of their districts, absolutely. But this is unprecedented. The way that the public has been shut out of the process is unprecedented. The national money that has poured into our state to influence policies that affect us as citizens is unprecedented, and people are very well aware of it. That's why you saw hundreds of thousands of people coming out to protest. That's why you see the signs that say, you know, Walker, your Coke dealer is online too. I mean, people get it. They get it. They understand what's going on. They don't like it. And it's just a complete travesty and an affront to a tradition of clean and open government in our state.
Mm-hmm. Briefly, Steve, last word on this.
Well, several of those assertions are ridiculous. But what I can tell you is I just had a flashback while Ruth was talking. I believe that we heard very similar things about 15 or 20 years ago when Tommy Thompson was the governor, where we had unprecedented spending because, you know, if Tommy Thompson could do anything, it was raise money for his races. You know, and we talked, and I remember people specifically talking about how Tommy Thompson was ruining state government. Tommy Thompson was taking away our long tradition of open meetings and open records and all of that. And I find it interesting that this echo 15 or 20 years later is taking place, which makes me think thoughts that are not real complimentary about the people who continue to make those complaints that they didn't like the election results.
Tommy looks like Richard Nixon now. He's the great liberal of Wisconsin's, the great liberal Republican of Wisconsin's past, because Walker has done him so many times better. I mean, Tommy actually worked with people on the other side of the aisle. This is not the Wisconsin of Tommy's era.
That's right. We're actually trying to be more fiscally responsible. Mm-hmm. Tommy didn't really win very many points in there either.
Right, and that's why we have a $143 million budget deficit.
let us move on to some other issues from the news this week. Voter ID got its first full day in the sun on Tuesday's primary. There were a smattering of problems reported here and there, but overall, election officials say it went smoothly. Meanwhile, a lawsuit was filed yesterday saying that this law will discriminate against minorities, specifically African Americans and Latinos who are less likely to have a government-issued ID. We need very quick answers or responses to all of these issues so we can get through as many as possible. Steve Prestigard, your thoughts on voter ID in Wisconsin?
Well, as far as I'm aware, there's not a single state with a voter ID law that's had that law overturned. It gets back to what has been said before. Getting a voter ID is not an onerous task. And of all people to be concerned about having their voting rights taken away, look at what happened in the South in the 1950s and 1960s. And it wasn't whites that had their voting rights taken away. It was African Americans and other minorities. So they ought to favor voter ID to have their votes actually count more, you know, more even than whites should.
All right, Ruth Conniff.
That's one of the most convoluted things I've ever heard in my life. It's a deliberate strategy by the Republicans to disenfranchise low-income minority voters. A lot of Republicans have said it out loud, including Frank Luntz. And, you know, what it does is it takes people who don't have driver's licenses and it makes it really hard for them to vote. It's very clear in states that have voter ID that there is much lower student, minority, and low-income voting. That's great for the Republicans, and that's why they're doing this.
Another issue in the news this week, the state assembly passed a bill that would take the teeth out of the Equal Pay Enforcement Act. It says that if you don't get equal pay for equal work in the workplace, you cannot sue your employer for punitive damages. Ruth Conniff, what do you think of that?
I think the Republicans are in an all-out war against women on many fronts. You know, and this is just one example of the extremely insulting approach that they take to issues that affect women. I mean, rolling back equal pay, you know, the onerous abortion restrictions, you know, taking on birth control. This is stuff that women do not like. And I think long term, the Republicans should really give a little thought to how this situates them with more than half of voters.
Why are Republicans waging war on women, Steve?
Well, let's see. Go back to the abortion comment. Believe it or not, not all women believe in unrestricted abortion rights. Go back to this particular thing with punitive damages. The only purpose that punitive damages, that the threat of punitive damages does is to put a thought of doubt in hiring, the whole hiring process. If I hire this person, are they going to sue me if I have to let them go? That is what has happened. That's what happens with the law, and that's what's been happening with when the law passed. The law should have never passed in the first place, would not have passed had it not been for having a Democratic governor and legislature. And by the way, this does not at all affect the ability of someone to sue in federal courts. All it does is affect state courts. And so to say that they're losing their rights, you still have an avenue, a legal avenue, if that's the case.
Let me talk about another big development in the ongoing debate over mining laws in Wisconsin. Republican Dale Schultz and Democrat Bob Jauch offered a compromise mining law, a new plan to change mining laws. Assembly Republicans don't like it. They say, you know, they say that mining companies won't do business in Wisconsin under the Jauch-Schultz compromise. Among other things, it lengthened the amount of time that environmental regulators, the DNR, would have to look over, you know, the situation. Ruth Conniff, what do you think of the new bill and the reaction to it?
I think that it really shows up what Republicans have done with this fast-track mining bill, which is to cut the public out of the process. And it's interesting, sort of the deafening silence for a couple of days after this was proposed, because it doesn't end the ability of it doesn't stop the basic idea of allowing these mines to go forward. It just says that the public should be able to appeal, which is something that the Assembly bill wiped out of the process, that there should be some avenue for legal challenge, that the process should be 18 months instead of 360 days. But, you know, the background to this is that this, you know, huge mine that we're trying to clear the way for, this single, really single effort that we're trying to clear the way for with this bill. It's a 21-mile-long, 1,000-foot-deep open-pit mine on some of the most pristine wetlands on the shore of Lake Superior. So, you know, they created this, it was supposed to be taken up by this special Senate Committee on Mining Jobs, and then the committee is abruptly dissolved by Scott Fitzgerald last week because they didn't say what he wanted them to say. And he came up. They came up with some of these very potential provisions of not cutting the public out of the process. So, you know, I think it really shows that this is an inside deal. This is exactly what we're talking about with out-of-state corporate interests pouring money into Wisconsin and seeking to make good on their investment and cutting the public out of the process. And mm-hmm. So I think it's really interesting to see this proposal come out and say, well, what about allowing the public back in?
Steve?
You're telling me, essentially, if I understand this right, that the DNR cannot complete an environmental assessment of a proposed mining in a year? That's just, I mean, it makes you wonder what in the world they do in the DNR. And, you know, this talk about this is a bipartisan compromise, I am really skeptical about hearing that because I think that the purpose of the compromise on the part of a lot of Democrats is to make sure the mine never gets built, similar to the Crandon mine many years ago, the proposal which also never got built. And I think Democrats need to listen to some of their own. I can't believe I'm saying this, but I saw Gordon Hintz, state representative from Oshkosh, Democrat, talk about how he didn't like the assembly bill, but did suggest, contrary to apparently what other Democrats think, that something needed to happen so that the mine proposal could go forward. Even some Democrats appear to believe that the fact that there is such rampant unemployment up north has been that way for decades. And here's a proposal, something that, you know, the construction would be thousands of union jobs and, you know, hundreds of jobs after the mine open. Again, given the economy around here, you're really taking a risk, I think, if you're going to be simply lockstep in opposition and bring up all of these red herrings about, oh, they're out of, you know, they're out of state, so they, you know.
You know, somebody... Steve, it was a Republican Senator Dale Schultz who said he didn't support the assembly version and said he was for the mine, as all the Democrats are saying they're for the mine, but they want it to be environmentally responsible.
Well, that would be, I mean, you know, Dale Schultz is about Dale Schultz. I think I said that earlier, and I've known him for 20-plus years. So I think that, I guess I have a little difficulty believing that. I don't find them credible, given what they've said in the last few months before all of this, and then particularly years ago with the other mine proposals. I think the mainstream position of the Democratic Party in this state, I'm not saying that Jauk is part of that position, but I think the mainstream position is they don't want that mine to happen, period.
Let me bring in another issue. This one is... this one's a little bit strange. A Republican representative, Joel Clayfish, was seen on camera casting votes in the assembly for his colleagues who were not in the assembly chambers. And there's been a little bit of a stink about this. It appears that this happens with members of both parties. Apparently it can be done if your, you know, seatmate says I have to go to the bathroom, if they vote on this, vote yay for me, then it's okay. But there are still some thoughts that, you know, this is inappropriate. This shouldn't happen. Should we be concerned about this, Ruth Conniff?
Well, it's really Bush League. I mean, come on. You have to be present and cast your vote. It's just, it's ridiculous that people can just wander off and have their friend vote for them. And obviously, it's a concern, and, you know, they need to knock it off. You can't do that in the U.S. Congress.
Yeah, so Scott Walker, when he was a legislator, thought that that maybe this was getting out of hand. Steve Prestigard?
Well, let's see. Channel 4 in Milwaukee quoted Jason Fields, who's no one's idea of a Republican, saying, yeah, it does happen all the time. It's happened literally for decades. So I don't, first off, I have a doubt, I have extreme doubt that it has ever affected a vote that was a really important or very close vote, because, you know, if it's going to be a 1 or 2 vote margin, you'll just have to, I guess, hold it and get out there and vote. So I think this is, as with many political debates in this state, much ado about very little.
All right, we are going to take a short pause. We'll come back with our Week in Review quiz. We'll talk some about the presidential race, and we'll talk about gas prices and some other national issues. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. It's time now for the Week in Review quiz. Who was in the news this week for a performance of the song Sweet Home Chicago? Think you know? 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. We will give you 5 minutes to call in your answer. We will randomly select a winner from all of the correct answers, and you will receive a book that we featured on the program sometime recently. So we can review question, who was in the news this week for a performance of the song Sweet Home Chicago? The winner and the answer at the end of the program. This is the Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, along with Ruth Conniff, who is political editor for the Progressive Magazine, and Steve Prestigard, author of the Presta Blog. And let's talk a little bit about that Marquette poll once again. It finds that Wisconsin Republicans favor Rick Santorum by a fairly big margin over all other Republican opponents in the GOP race. Santorum is really has been leading in some other states, including Michigan, where Mitt Romney is from. Steve, what do you make of Rick Santorum's popularity these days?
I think it may have more to do with the fact that he's doing pretty well nationally. I have to say that, and it does go back also to this movement in the GOP that is just kind of reflexively opposed to Mitt Romney. Now, in some cases, there's probably valid reasons to be opposed to Mitt Romney. I think it's somewhat surprising because, you know, if you look at the history of Republican presidential primaries in this state, I don't think you see the most conservative candidate out of the field winning very often. You know, I think in 88 and 92, George Bush won over, certainly in 92, Pat Buchanan. I think, if I remember right, Bob Dole won in 96. He certainly wasn't the most conservative candidate out there. So it is somewhat surprising. I'm not sure it's going to make a huge difference, though, because the way that this race has gone, whoever is up on the top is, they're not there very long. And in fact, it's in some cases, it's been a couple of days that, you know, somebody's on top. Gingrich, for instance, was on top a couple of weeks ago and now seems to be, you know, cratering once again. The only constant in the race at this point is that Ron Paul is, you know, certainly clearly in it up to the convention.
Yeah. What do you make, Ruth, of Rick Santorum having a big lead, according to this Marquette law school poll?
I think if I were Republican, I'd be really worried. I mean, I agree with Steve. This guy is not ready for prime time. He's not ready to be the candidate in the general election. I mean, it says something about the weakness of the field that he is now on top, especially at this late date. I mean, you know, this guy doesn't believe that we should have birth control or public schools. And in the debate this week, he looked awful. I thought Ron Paul just destroyed him, first by calling him a fake, and then basically by just demonstrating that he was a fake, getting him to say that he voted against his principles on No Child Left Behind and Planned Parenthood. You know, he took one for the team, and then in his closer saying that his principles are the reason that you should elect him. I mean, people piled on him, which was something to see, because whoever thought he would be the front runner. And he did a very poor job of defending himself. So I say, you know, go on. Look at primary field.
The poll also found that President Obama would beat all four of those Republicans. I think he had a double-digit lead over all of them, according to this poll. Of course, this is just a snapshot in time. It doesn't mean this is what's going to happen on Election Day. But does that, Ruth, surprise you at all?
No, it doesn't. I mean, I just think that Obama is a much, much stronger candidate than any of these guys. And, you know, as Steve points out, they can't stand their own most viable candidate, Mitt Romney. They'll do anything to get rid of him, including going to the, you know, crazy lunatic fringe. So, you know, no big surprise. I mean, they've been destroying Romney themselves. And Gail Collins, who I love it, mentions in every column still that he, you know, put the dog on top of the car.
Yeah, that still comes up. Steve, what do you make of President Obama's strength in Wisconsin, according to this poll?
I'm not, frankly, the least bit surprised about it. Let's remember that this is a state that has not voted for a Republican presidential candidate since Ronald Reagan in 1984. I think I was on a previous edition of this show right after the November 2010 election, and I believe Ruth was kind of bemoaning that the state was becoming all Republican red. And I think I said at the time that I didn't buy that. I don't buy it now. And until a majority of voters in this state actually vote for a Republican and send Wisconsin's electoral votes to a Republican candidate, I'm not going to buy it. Wisconsin is, for one thing, one of the few states in the country where Obama is above water in his approval rating. I think there's only like 8 states that that's the case. And there's a map floating around the internet. I think I put it on my Facebook page that if the election were held today based on the Gallup approval ratings, Obama would lose the election and not very closely in terms of electoral votes. But of course, Wisconsin was one of those blue states in this poll. So no, I'm not the least bit surprised, and I'm guessing that he'll end up winning this state regardless of who he runs against.
So Republicans this week are blaming President Obama for high gas prices. How fair is that, Steve?
He's in office, isn't he? And as we saw 4 years ago when gas prices jumped beyond where they are right now, George Bush was in office, John McCain was the presidential candidate, and as we hit Memorial Day, gas prices jumped over $4 a gallon. Well, here it is, it's not even March 1st yet, and gas prices are about to jump in that direction. And Obama's, you know, he has zero credibility on energy issues with the non-aligned voter as it is. He's going to have a really interesting time trying to tell people that when gas prices are $5 a gallon, as they already are in California, when gas prices are $5 a gallon, that this is really good for us. You know, good luck with that.
Yeah, and President Obama was defending himself and saying that this was not his fault, and that there are lots of efforts going on in domestic oil production in this country. Ruth Conniff.
I think the president said something that's true. Whether it's politically advantageous to him is another question. I mean, it's not good to be running for re-election when you have really high gas prices and people don't like it, but it is a long-term problem, and it is not, you know, an artifact of this administration or its actually somewhat feeble energy policy. And, you know, what the Republicans have done is to strike back and say, well, if we had the Keystone pipeline underway, that would solve the problem, which is ridiculous, because it's, first of all, it's aimed at oil for export, so it's not going to help us here in this country. And, you know, he said, you know, if people think that we're going to solve this problem with more drilling, they're kidding themselves, and that is absolutely the case. Until we can unhook ourselves from our oil addiction, we are going to continue to suffer from the fact that we're so dependent on this non-renewable resource, and we really have to get going on developing alternatives. And I wish the president were doing more on that.
We have callers who've been waiting to talk about this. Willem in Colfax, go ahead.
Hi. I see these signs that say, drill here, drill now, pay less. And I think it's, I'm not surprised that it's, I think it's part of a huge propaganda, paid for by the Petroleum Institute and all the gas and oil interests that sort of suggest that all we have to do is, like, ship all of our sand to in this fracking process, and somehow all this is going to lower the price of gas. when, you know, our gas, our oil, that would be true if it was a national oil company that was owned by the citizens of the United States, but it's owned by multinational corporations. The New York Times said it's the first time since 1949 that the United States became a net exporter of gas and oil.
Yeah,
so
all right.
These people that think their prices are going to go down, that's just delusional.
Thank you very much, Willem. And we have Laverne in Monroe who has a thought about gas prices, too. Hi, Laverne.
Good morning, Joy. Great program. Good morning, guests. I think the Republicans have a lot of problems on the state and the federal level, and the gas prices are one of them. When they say about the gas prices go down to $2.50, last night on the public television there was a Bert Chilton on, and he said the problem is the Wall Street speculators. They're actually nothing more than a bunch of hedge fund dealers that control all the commodities.
All right. Two callers who don't think this is President Obama's fault. A quick react, Steve?
I don't think that the voters are going to think that it's not President Obama's fault. He better come up with a better answer than the ones that he's forwarded so far. He's got time, but I don't think people are going to be happy paying for $5 or $6 a gallon gas through an entire summer and having their vacation plans, not to mention just being able to get to work, ruined because of Obama's curious policies that, you know, certain forms of energy are better than others.
Time for just a couple of quick thoughts on, and we thought, Steve, you would have certainly some thoughts on this. There's one state controversy. The state high school basketball tournaments may move from Madison to Green Bay. Since this is an issue that's close to your heart, what are your thoughts?
Tom Oates of the Wisconsin State Journal ran an excellent column last weekend where he essentially blamed everybody for it. And it is, in fact, it's almost everybody's fault. The Green Bay people can't be blamed for coming up with a really good bid for the WIA. But it's, you know, two of the most arrogant organizations in this state are the WIA and the athletic director of the University of Wisconsin. And on one sense, it's kind of like watching the Iran-Iraq war taking place. You're kind of hoping that both sides lose. But this is going to be a major problem in Madison because you're talking about state tournaments that bring in $9 million in business every year for businesses in downtown Madison. And I think the UW has made gross mistakes by kind of assuming the WIA wasn't going to leave. I think the WIA has, you know, certainly pegged the arrogance meter on their side also.
All right.
I
got to jump in because we have time to reveal our winner for the Weekend Review quiz. Congratulations to Greta in Cottage Grove, who was in the news this week for a performance of the song Sweet Home Chicago. Well, let's hear it.
Come on.
All right, so that was President Obama with some help from B.B. King. The president was pulled on stage during a star-studded blues concert at the White House. And I believe that this White House blues concert will air on Wisconsin Public Television on Monday at 7 or 8 in the evening. I'm sorry, I don't remember. Check your local listings, as they say. So it sounds, Ruth, like President Obama could have a music career ahead of him.
It could be. He is so cool. I mean, this is what we love about Obama, is that he is so much hipper than Rick Santorum.
That's a low standard.
All right, we're going to have to leave it there. I hope you both have a very good weekend. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Joy.
Ruth Conniff, political editor for the Progressive Magazine, Steve Prestigard, author of the Presta blog. Thanks to Rob Ferret, Bill Martins, and Amanda Magnus for producing this program. Have a great weekend. We'll be back on Monday. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.